making plans for someone else. Every book I've ever held rewrites itself.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Wednesday morning. Just listening to the music of Jenny Owens Youngs. S in the wrong place. By Joe. Jenny Owen Youngs playing Cafe Lena in Saratoga Springs on Friday night. Cafe Lena, two F's, don't forget. Cafe Lena. .org. And you can see the playlist and follow along at home by going to wamc.org/roundtable. Good morning, all. I hope you are well. I hope you had a lovely evening and are ready for a new day. And here we are to go over a lot of the topics and concerns and things that are happening in the world. We have a great group to discuss such, and we will get right to it. Don't forget, you can always help the Lockbox. It needs your help. Ray, Sarah, we'll be back in a little bit. But in the meantime, WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC. We welcome Joseph Palamountain, Chair in Government at Skidmore College, Bo Breslin, back to the program. Good morning, Bo. How are you?
Joe, I'm very well. Thanks for asking me.
You're not on the payroll yet, but you're getting close. We had a last minute scratch, and because the Belmont's coming up, I'm using horse metaphors.
Nice.
You know, there's been a scratch, and. So I'm actually going to put you on 5, Emily, come to think of it. There you go. Bo, we called like 10 minutes ago, and somehow he made it from Saratoga. I don't know how, but congratulations. We appreciate you being here.
I'm thrilled.
Very nice. We also welcome Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University in Albany, and because the word preparedness is in his title, he was here a half hour ago.
I'd like to be here early, Joe. I wouldn't want to let our listeners down.
Well, thank you.
And I get to listen to the amazing imitation of the Elephant Man from Ray Graff. That in itself was worth the early time.
Yes, it's a great performance.
And Joe, today is actually Amnesty International Day.
Oh.
At a time when the world continues to need moral compasses, I just thought it was good to recognize the work that they do and the day that they have.
Absolutely.
It's also National Brisket Day, too, for the rest of us.
Mm. Mm. Good, too.
Mm. Barbecue brisket. Mm. I mean, Amnesty International is very important. But, brisket. Good. Thank you for bringing that to our attention, Bob. I appreciate it very, very much.
My job is done here.
Yes, excellent.
Almost.
We are thrilled also that Emily Honan is with us, Grants Analyst based in Albany. Good morning, Emily. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I am very grateful for the long weekend that we just had.
It was
one of our 4 government-sanctioned holidays my job allows us.
Very, very nice. Well, good for you, and I hope you enjoyed it, and wait for the next one, which I assume is 4th of July. Is that the next one?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good.
yep.
Well, kick off the days till then. It won't be long. It'll go quick, hopefully. Thank you very much for being here. It's a delight to have you all here. And we'll jump right in on the stories that are making news this morning. We begin with a story that broke last night and still trying to or still waiting for more details, but we're that are kind of dripping in, but there's a lot we don't know. The State Department on Tuesday suspended foreign students' visa appointments as it weighs expanded guidelines for screening applicants' social media accounts, according to an internal cable obtained by the Washington Post. Experts called it a troubling development in the Trump administration's campaign against universities that it says foster anti-Semitism. We'll get into that in a second, but Bob, can you real quick, and I know this is going to sound smart alecky, but what is an international cable?
Oh, so an international the cables are directives that come from the State Department to each of the consulates and embassies. So it's policy direction, and it goes back to the days when it was actually a cable itself.
Okay, so it's not the means of transmission. It is the transmission.
It used to be the means of transmission. Now it's just that the term that they use for the directives coming out of the State Department.
I thank you for the clarification.
Foggy Bottom.
Effective immediately in preparation for an expansion of required social media screening and vetting, consular sections should not add any additional student or exchange visitor visa appointment, that's EMNJ, capacity until further guidance is issued, which will happen in coming days, and Cable said to agency staff. Unclaimed visa appointment times should, quote, immediately be removed from availability. The document was first reported by Politico. A senior State Department official confirmed to the Post the accuracy of the cable on the suspension of visa processing. The Trump administration has led an unyielding battle against universities that it alleges allow anti-Semitism, most recently attempting to bar Harvard from hosting international students and directing federal agencies to cancel or redirect contracts with the Ivy League school. The government also has orchestrated a crackdown on foreign national students who have expressed pro-Palestinian political beliefs, often citing social media posts and campus protests as grounds for detaining them and revoking their legal status. One more paragraph from the Washington Post, and I'll turn this over to our group. Much of these efforts, like Harvard certification to admit foreign students and student deportations, are mired in legal fights, but the administration has pressed forward to target visa processes. Homeland Security last month, citing White House executive orders aimed at addressing anti-Semitism, said it will begin screening non-citizen social media accounts for anti-Semitic content as reasons to deny visa and green card applications. Bob, my immediate question for you is, how many people is that?
We're talking a pretty large number. You know, I wanted to say over a million, but I don't know off the top of my head.
No,
how many
I mean,
are...
I apologize. I mean that actually would then have anti-Semitic remarks on their social media.
I don't think the number is great.
I'm just wondering, is this worth bringing this to a complete halt?
No.
To make sure that everyone's social media is scoured for however many you're going to find.
No, unfortunately, you know, I feel strongly that the issue of anti-Semitism is being used as a stalking horse just to go after the international students and the universities and colleges. And for people at home who think, this isn't very exciting, let me see if I can frame this for folks. Our colleges and universities have brought in international students who have then fallen in love with the country and either gone back to their own countries and become leaders of their countries, in which case they're sympathetic to us, which is part of soft power, or in many situations, have actually stayed here. So we've actually been robbing the rest of the world of some of the best and the brightest. And if you think about what's happened in Palo Alto with the growth of the tech boom, it is directly related to the strength of our university systems, but also the fact that we're bringing in these great minds who are then coming here and they're building our economy. So when we say, well, why is this important? It's important because it has an impact on our future research and development. It has an impact on our position in the global order. It has a huge impact on the soft power that the United States has ridden on for a lot of years. And then it also has an economic impact both at the global level, but also at the state and local level. So it has a huge impact on the bottom line of the colleges and universities, but it also has a huge impact on these are students that won't be showing up, so they're not going to be renting places to live. They're not going to be buying from the stores. It adds to the general malaise in the overall economy. I'll also toss this because I want to sort of throw this out because it's a concern that I have. It's also another example of the administration working within the powers that it has. They have the power to check to see if people coming into the country are here on legitimate reasons. But it also is an expansion of what I view as sort of an authoritarian bend. And what really worries me is the fact that Congress is not having any oversight over the administration. State Department and now DHS will also be putting in tools that then can be used against us as citizens. So as they perfect the use of AI and as they perfect the use of scraping of social media, there aren't any guide rails in place that says that these same folks aren't going to start using them against us. And you say, well, Bob, you know, you sound awful paranoid. Given what we're seeing the administration do, how could I be anything but paranoid? So when you start to look at the situation, you're starting to see another effort from an administration that is willing to knock out one of the institutional pillars of American strength, and frankly, why the U.S. has had global dominance through both its scientific discoveries and its economy. That's why this story is so important to us.
But I'm also interested in that fact that this is a training ground for perhaps the future of streamlining this, a practice round to make sure that perhaps all of our social media can be scoured.
Well, and if there's nobody watching the watchers, who's going to say that this Department of Homeland Security or this Department of Defense, which I have zero faith in leadership in either of those institutions, certainly I have no faith in the Department of Justice right now, who is going to be watching government? And we're putting, again, these really sophisticated tools into the hands of government that I guess you just have to trust that they're not going to be misused. But that's where Congress's unwillingness to do the job that they're supposed to do becomes so important.
Emily.
Yeah, and I also think it's very important to remember that Trump's entire kingdom is built on a foundation of lies. They don't even have to find anything. Not only do they not have to find anything anti-Semitic, they can just lie and say whatever they did find was anti-Semitic. Even if they didn't find anything at all, they just say, oh, you know what? We found that. You can't talk about that. It's classified, and you're not coming to the country, or you're getting kicked out of the country, or you don't get this federal job, or you can't keep your own job. And I know a lot of people are probably going to say, oh, well, we don't want terrorists in this country. I mean, you can't be posting anti-American stuff on social media and expect to get let into the country. That's not the point. This is a precedent. Every single thing that Trump has done has been testing the waters to see how much he can get away with before people realize, oh, I didn't speak for those people, and now there's no one left to speak for me.
Yeah. That idea of just of supplying the facts. I was watching the president yesterday talk about how no one from Harvard knows the answer to 2+2, and they're just letting these people in, and they don't know anything. and why should we be spending money on them? And I was trying to follow along. I really was, Bo, but it was hard.
Absolutely, Joe. So let me throw out a couple what I would describe as hypocrisies, right? So I think there are a couple things that are interesting to think about. One is, remember the letter that he sends to Harvard, doubling down and on the idea of ideological diversity, right? This notion that somehow a particular perspective is not being represented in the liberal Harvard. How is this ideologically diverse to scour for particular messages and say, you know, no, you can't come into the country? Two,
Oh, I just thought it was funny how he wanted DEI for himself.
Yes, of course. Right. You know, what Bob said is absolutely true, and I'll just expand on it. About 10% of Skidmore students are come from abroad, right? So they're going through this, and it's going to be a small number, but 10% of Skidmore students is about 300 students, and we're a small liberal arts college. It has made the college so much better. When I came in 1998, 1% of the students were international students. Now it's 10%. And the idea that you can have a rich, robust, liberal education today with just primarily white men is foolish, right? At the end of the day, we are gutting, Trump is gutting the institution, and I know that's what he's trying to do. But there's hypocrisy there in light of the fact that America First, we're the leading country when it comes to higher ed. Three, this didn't get a lot of attention, Joe, but let's talk about Marco Rubio, State Department. This is a State Department.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Rubio for a second. Rubio has four jobs, actually. He's still National Archives guy, and he's USAID. But he has two major jobs, right? And one of them is Secretary of State, and the other is NSA, his National Security Advisor. Those are incompatible, right? The Secretary of State is about negotiation, it's about diplomacy, and the NSA leader is about bombs and bullets, right? It's a better connection, a better grouping of that job if Trump had put the NSA director with as the Secretary of Defense, not as Secretary of State. Couple more hypocrisies or ironies, and then I'll let it go. The fact that the president himself is the social media president, right? So here he is using his social network as a way to essentially get in office, and now social networking and Twitter and X and all those sorts of things is now his tool as ammunition against particular people. Finally, I'll say that, as Bob said, the economic impact is serious. The economic impact at colleges is serious. People will lose their jobs if visas are become difficult. We have several folks at Skidmore who just do student visas. They'll lose their jobs. So all of these things strike me as just hypocrisy and a certain sense of irony.
We'll pause there for a moment. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue and move on this topic. We'll move it forward, and I want to hear from folks. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will be back with more discussion after this.
No, we're on.
We are on. 1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. Pull up a chair. Make yourself comfortable.
Thank you very much, I'm sure.
1-800-323-9262. So I'm Sarah LeDuc. This is Ray Graff.
Hello.
We went into the roundtable panel hoping to make a challenge of $1,000 from Anonymous in Albany, New York, if we could reach $385,000 in the total raised so far by 10 minutes from now. But we made it.
In fact, with some to spare, thanks to you at home or in the car or in the long-haul tractor trailer, if you're going across the country and just tuning in, we are at $385,927, just a tick under $1,000 more than we needed to make this challenge.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Lovely.
1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org to keep it going. The whatever you can give now helps shorten the fund drive and return us to regular programming. We are mostly in regular programming right now, just doing some of these short lockbox pushes to remind you what's at stake and what you can do to help. But next week, Monday, 6 a.m., full day of fundraising, and the only way to end it is to reach the goal, and the only way to reach the goal is through your generous donations.
The number is 800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262. Volunteers are standing by to take your pledge right now of any amount, from a dollar to infinity. Or you can go online at WAMC.org. If you pledge infinity online, I don't know if you'll break the computers or not. But
but we're willing to figure it out.
Yeah, if you have infinity, go for it.
1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. Some people coming through for us this morning, helping all of us to reach that challenge from Anonymous in Albany, are Sheila in Pittsfield, Mass. Listen every morning to the Roundtable and love how they dig into details on the issues. We heard from Anonymous in Scotia, New York. Lynn and Alex in High Falls, New York say, where else can we hear radio hosts discuss how to wear a barrel?
That's right.
That was something Ray and I were pondering in the last break.
How do you wear a barrel?
As our minds, you know, slipped out of our ears and we shoved them back in.
Right.
800-323-9262. Thanks also to Pamela and Stephen of Germantown, New York. We would be lost without WAMC. Thank you for everything you are doing. Eric in Pelham, Mass. pledged. Thank you. We heard from Anonymous in Oneonta, who says we absolutely need WAMC now more than ever. And Liz in Rifton, New York, says love WAMC since 1981 from Burlington, Vermont.
I love it. Now listen.
I love Burlington.
Some breaking news while you were thanking people.
Yeah.
All right. Now we blasted through a challenge. It was the first challenge
of this lockbox.
Right. And really, challenges happen during the fun drive, which begins Monday. But apparently, it's catching because $2,000 from Anonymous in Washington, Massachusetts.
Wow.
Now, this is not going to be easy.
No.
We have to hit $395,000 by 11 a.m., by the end of the roundtable panel. So that's 395K by 11 a.m. Where are we now? We're at 386,552. So that's about $8,500. That means everybody, we're going to go back to the panel in a couple of minutes, but it's important. If we'll make this extra $2,000 from Anonymous in Washington, we'll need people to pledge online or call. Just take a break from the panel discussion and call 800-323-9262. But we'll need a steady stream if we hope to hit the $395,000 mark by the end of the panel today.
Yes, indeed we will. 800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. 1-800-323-9262. This isn't just about funding. It is about preserving the mission of public radio, especially when it's being challenged in subtle but serious ways. And some not so subtle, some incredibly bold and vociferous ways.
I have not seen a lot of subtlety. I got to be honest with you.
800-323-9262. Very serious challenges being made to the life of public media, and we hope that you value it and can do what you can now to support specifically our radio station that connects this community together and this community to the world. 800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. 1-800-323-9262. $2,000 on the table as a challenge. Donated by Anonymous from Washington, Mass., who says, let me give you this very generous pledge, this huge amount of support to motivate my fellow listeners to give. We want to reach the $395,000 point by 11 a.m. And then Anonymous from Washington, Mass. will give us another $2,000, which is incredibly generous.
And, you know, you said, you made a great turn of phrase there. You said public radio is facing serious challenges. And then there is somebody who made a serious challenge because that person understands that Anonymous in Washington, Massachusetts understands that it's a fragile enterprise. It's been here, yeah, in the current incarnation for 40 plus years, but it's always been a fragile enterprise. And the only way the train keeps a rolling all night long is if you pledge. 800-323-9262, and that's the truth. There are no corporate fat cats. There are no shareholders. This is independent public radio, and we need you more than ever. WAMC.org to make your pledge.
Every dollar you give now reduces the time we have to spend fundraising.
Yeah.
That wasn't good. I'll have to work on some new parodies for next week.
Okay.
But until then, if you haven't been driven away by our goofiness,
yes,
we return you to the roundtable panel, but you can keep pledging.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We are talking about the State Department on Tuesday suspending foreign students' visa appointments as it weighs expanded guidelines for screening applicants' social media accounts. That, according to an internal cable obtained by the Washington Post. We have heard from all of our panelists this morning, but Bob, I know there were a couple of points you wanted to make.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. There are a couple more points that I'll throw out for listeners to think about. One of the other concerns that I have is that as the government is getting better and better at scrubbing social media, it raises concerns in my mind about what is considered to be acceptable speech in postings, and in the longer term, it becomes part of a broader conversation about what does freedom of speech mean under this administration. But let me toss this at you. Is given what Rubio has set up, if I was an international student and I posted something saying, I support Amnesty International Day, I'm really worried about the starvation of children in Gaza, would that be considered to be a disqualifier? And the fact that there is no transparency about what we consider to be anti-Semitic versus just critical of governmental policies, it makes this a particularly slippery slope. I also really did appreciate the your comments about the about Rubio's multiple roles with the NSA. I actually took it in a slightly different area, is that I think it shows how neutered the entire cabinet is. Yeah. That I really think that we're looking at a cabinet not of, 14, 15, 16 individuals, but rather two or three. In that, I see Project 25's fingers on this. I see Stephen Miller's fingers on this. I'm not sure that Rubio really is even running the State Department right now, which is in keeping with Trump, but it's also terrifying in the sense that as he grows more erratic, and you just simply need to look at his posts over the weekend, as he grows more erratic, one of the balances against a mad tyrant was the cabinet. Right. And the fact that the cabinet is now so neutered that mechanism has been taken off the table.
There's also, I would also say that the playbook has changed a little bit, right? Think about Doge coming in, Elon Musk coming in, eliminating a decent amount of jobs in the civil service. A lot of these operations, no longer have the capacity to do the type of checking that this particular decree suggests. So really the formula for Trump administrative success is the scare tactic without the ability to be able to actually do the work necessary, because they've gutted the civil service in lots of different areas. So I think that's part of the equation is now they're just doing this. I'll also throw out there, don't forget that his first order of business in his first administration was the Muslim ban, right? That got overturned by the Supreme Court, and then he adds Venezuela and so on. This is just a clever way of sidestepping that and getting a similar outcome.
Am I?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's pretty evil. It's pretty, it's the authoritarian playbook. It's take out the universities, take out anybody in the established systems that could possibly go against you. Make sure that no one can enter those systems for the foreseeable future. Then go for public radio, go for individual social media, and, it just goes on.
But we go back to a point that it's a really important point, though, the fact that within the bureaucracy, the bureaucracy that has taken such a beating under this current administration, it's doubly insidious, because as the State Department's going to want to, or Homeland Security is going to want to spin up the capacity to monitor social media, it's a level of expertise that you just don't get off of, off the street.
Right.
What they've done, though, is that they've made it so that they've been cutting all of the critical infrastructure, like human resources, the ability for people to actually run searches to hire, which then becomes an excuse not to carry out policies that are in law and are required by the executive branch. But it also then will allow for pivots to the private sector, which will then become, you know, because they are, quote, more efficient than government. And here's a problem. This isn't an issue of efficiency. It's an issue about of civil liberties. So you start to I start to worry about them enabling the AI bros in ways that go even further than what DOGE has done. And I'm still until I'm proven wrong, I still insist that our data, the data that DOGE went in and scooped up from places like the IRS and Social Security and the State Department and all of these places, resides now on servers that are in the hands of non-governmental entities, and is potentially going to be misused because nobody knows where that data is, and there are no controls over the folks that control it. That's why all of this comes together as a continued threat in my mind to our very basic civil liberties. And if the executive branch is not going to worry about our civil liberties, we really need to kick it in with the legislative branch, and that includes folks in this area.
Right.
Okay. And it includes folks from both parties, that they better get off it or we need to replace whole scale.
They're not going to get off it. What I would also throw out on the table is, you know, this is a little bit of the legacy of the USA Patriot Act, right? So, and there were reasons why that was probably appropriate at the time. I'm not suggesting it wasn't, you know, that the action on the part of the Bush administration should have been swift. That said, that was a wholesale reduction of our civil liberties. And last thing I'll say on this one is the idea that the chilling effect was the reason why the framers put the First Amendment in place, was this idea, not that you necessarily would have legislation, although the Adams administration was quick to do that, but the idea that government can make it so that particular messages never enter the marketplace of ideas, the chilling effect. And so right now, we're just living out that particular scenario.
Lots of letters. We'll go to those, and we'll, but before we do, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll get to the letters that we have. We welcome yours, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be back right after this.
Shot off some flares at night, drinking till we felt safe, but you know we were right now. I never said.
I think it's a panel first this morning. Usually when we get in here and we all get going, it just raises the temperature. And we realized during the break we were all freezing to death. So Bob, ever being our preparedness person, said, can we turn the heat on? This is very, very, very cold. Because, you know, you're in that shoulder season. Like I put on a short sleeve shirt today. But I don't know. I think if I was in long sleeve, it would have been.
Yeah, no, it would be better with hoodies. I mean, I don't like it when you have to have hoodies, vests, and you've got the mayflies. So we've got.
Yeah, you got a lot going on.
A lot of goodness going on.
And
right
meanwhile,
now.
Nobody can see it on the radio, but my shirt looks like I'm a Funfetti cupcake.
Yes.
You're looking sharp today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. All right, let's go to Amy. I heard Bob and I agree that we should all be panicking. Okay, Bob, but what do we do? That was the second part of Amy's note.
Well, thank you, Amy, for asking, because now is more than ever is the time that our collective voices need to be heard. You know, that even getting out on the side of the street with the sign that says "No Kings" is one of the few things that will scare the powers that be. What the powers that be are counting on is that the American public are sheep, and that they're not going to push back. So the idea of calling your elected officials, the idea of emailing your elected officials, your idea of getting involved, letting your position be known. It's the worst time to be silent. And what the administration is doing is that they're trying to make it so that that people will remain silent so they can continue to push their agenda. So collective action is now.
Which is why, and I apologize for the crass nature of this, but which is why they're trying to silence the media, why they're trying to shut down those who speak out and who tell the truth, and why NPR, why PBS, why 60 Minutes. And I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out why that's the case. But when you ask what you can do, I apologize for taking the ball here, but it's supporting those institutions because they're going to be the ones who are going to tell you what's going on and hopefully engage you to a point where you will be able to take action in a meaningful and educated way.
And just think about how muted the mainstream media has been in its criticism of Trump and his policies.
What did they call it? A troubling development?
Yes, but even think about a situation. Think about how in 2 weeks, okay, in 2 weeks.
A troubling development seems like the light bulb went out, doesn't it? Yeah. Oh, that's a troubling development.
He's starting to scrape social media for un-American views.
But in 2 weeks, we're going to host a Soviet Union military parade that also happens to coincide with the president's birthday.
His 79th.
Through the streets of our capital. And the price tag is conservatively, I think, they're trying to say $45 million. I think it's going to be closer to $100 million, notwithstanding the damage it's going to do to the roads because tanks and roads aren't great. At the same time, this Congress has put together a disgusting bill that will literally kill Americans because it's taking away basic health care for tens of millions and reduces or eliminates food for children. Think about where that is. People should be screaming, and it shouldn't be a left or right situation. People should be screaming, and they're not.
And let me—I'll just add two more things. I'm an American institutionalist, so I tend to think about Washington more than I possibly should. But state and local politics is a lot of where the rubber hits the road, and so involvement in state and local politics can make a big difference. Secondly, and this is silly, right? I will say on the air that it's unlikely that there'll be another constitutional amendment in my lifetime. But we were just talking during break, constitutional reform is something we should be talking about. It's the same constitutional text we've had for 238 years. It needs an update. And so
Maybe right now is it the time for an update?
Well,
not with this administration.
Depending on what that update is, true. I think you can make weird term limits for federal court judges and so on. I'm not saying these things you can snap your fingers and all of a sudden they're done, but we need to continue, as Bob said, we need to continue to have conversations on the streets, in our town halls and so on, about the ways in which we can make slow incremental change in order to make the next 238 years better.
Ellie writes to us and says there were about 400,000 new student visas issued in 2024 with the closure of 132 Department of State offices and 3,400 U.S. State Department jobs chopped effective June 1st. It will be difficult for new students to get their visas in time to matriculate this fall. That often starts in August that semester. In 2015, international students contributed 28% of the revenues of public universities, about $9 billion in 2015. This is another example of solving a problem that doesn't exist with a sledgehammer. Emily is correct. It's another page in the authoritarian playbook.
But that's why they also are doing it right now, though, Joe, is that they're doing it now so that it will be impossible for international students to get here in August. They time this purposefully to to pretty much kill the international student visa program.
And think about all of the international students who are just no longer going to consider coming to the United States this year, I'm talking about, right? We're not going to go through the visa process because I don't want you scrubbing my social media. That quote-unquote chilling effect is real.
Well, not to mention you may never get back. You know what's the it isn't like it's a you're entering into a stable environment.
Right.
The whole thing is turbulent. Let's go to Kathy, who says, as a 1965 graduate of Skidmore College, when there were not many international students, I'm very happy to hear Bo stand up for them and against the dangerous, oppressive policies of the Trump regime. I will be at Skidmore this weekend with four of my classmates for my 60th reunion. Well, go,
nice.
Kathy.
Go, Kathy. Nice. Yeah,
goes quick, doesn't it? Seems like only yesterday. Then we go to Bruce. What troubles me about what the Trump administration is trying to do with student visa applications is that it feels like we are becoming the kind of country we pitied back when I was young in the 1970s. We're becoming a country where speech is policed, where foreign visitors are seen first as a threat. We're forgetting the founding principles of this country and forgetting so much of what has allowed us to flourish as a country. If this trend continues in a generation, we will be a backward country that has been left behind by the modern world. That from Bruce.
But Joe, I think one of the big differences, having grown up in that period of time, though, is the way that 50% of the country is treated. It's not just our international students or potential visitors. It's the disdain that this president holds for 50% of the country. I mean, I noted the Memorial Day, his Memorial Day text, where he wished a happy Memorial Day even to the I think he used the term scum,
demi scumbags, I believe.
Right. So thank you, Donald, for your wishing me a happy weekend. But there wasn't, there was never a president in my lifetime that wouldn't have at least tried to bring the country together. So the differences were truly ideologically political versus this just disdain and hatred for half of the country.
Yeah, it's very embarrassing. I'd say he's just, I've said this over and over, he's embarrassing to our country. His talk with the president of South Africa, where he was showing him conspiracy videos that have been debunked, I have, it's so embarrassed. Like,
no.
The secondhand embarrassment is just, sorry, I can't go on.
No, it's it's concerning and certainly something that's, in that case, very hard to watch. John writes to us and says, as a Jew, I'm getting tired of the Trump administration attacking colleges and universities on behalf of protecting Jews. Trump is using the Jews to help scapegoat people who do not agree with the U.S. government policies, i.e. attacking students and others who believe in free speech and who believe that the Gaza overreach by Israel is wrong. How long till the Trump administration uses another group to attack the Jews?
And let's go just 1 second, Joe. Remember, it was Donald Trump who said after Charlottesville that there were good people on both sides. You want, in my mind, anti-Semitism? The idea that you would endorse the Tiki Torch rally that the Proud Boys and others held, where they were chanting the anti-Semitic tropes from Nazi Germany. To me, you want anti-Semitism? That's anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm.
Dorothy writes, what is anti-Semitism? Seems as if Trump considers it pro-Palestine only. Trump and Netanyahu are working together to remove the Palestinian people from Gaza so Trump can have his Riviera on the Mediterranean. Then we go to William. When people apply for a real ID driver's license, I was informed by the New York State DMV that the underlying identity documents are, quote, sent to the Federal Bureau in downtown Albany. The customer service representative that I asked did not know which agency is getting the information. TSA, DHS, FBI, We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will return after this.
1-800-323-9262. That's the phone number. What's the website?
WAMC.org. That's the website.
That's
what do you
fun.
Do there? You support WAMC.
That's correct. It's the Lockbox. Sarah LaDuc, we are making great progress here, and we'll just take a few minutes before we go back to the panel to tell you we are now in the Lockbox at $387,882.
Okay.
Which is amazing.
Wonderful.
And we have some people to thank, but I also want to mention that we have a challenge on the table from Anonymous in Washington, Massachusetts. If we reach $395,000 in the lockbox by 11. By the time we are done here, then we're going to get another $2,000. So we have a ways to go. We have $7,118 to go.
That's a lot of money.
That's 1 hour.
Yes.
We'll need everybody who has not made a pledge to do so now. If you made a pledge, you're good. But if you haven't, 1-800-323-9262. WAMC.org. Either way works.
WAMC's June Fund Drive begins, as we have been telling you, at 6 a.m. on June 2nd. That's this coming Monday. And when it starts, we'll pause all regular programming to raise the money needed to keep the station running, and not a penny more. We have a $1.25 million known goal three times per year to operate the budget of WAMC, and we need to reach that goal as soon as possible to get back to regular programming and not bother you again for your donations for a few months.
Just so that you know, I'm working on this all the time, even when I'm not on mic with you. I texted my friend John Fisher from the Culinary Institute and asked him if he could pledge $800,000 to end the drive.
And what did he say?
He said, not today, but I'll check every day from now on.
Great. Yeah. Great. 800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262, or WAMC.org. Again, a $2,000 challenge on the table from Anonymous in Washington, Massachusetts, if we can reach $395,000 by 11 a.m. And where are we again?
We're in the 6,000. Now we're at $388,122.
Fantastic.
We need to raise enough money to hit $395, and we are $6,878 away.
All right. Thank you to these following people helping us along on our journey. They helped us meet our last challenge, and we're so grateful. Thanks to Catherine in Kingston. Woodstock. Catherine in Woodstock. That was to myself. Uh-huh. Catherine in Woodstock, a listener for decades and can't imagine life without WAMC. We heard from Anonymous in Lenox, Massachusetts, Alba and Charles in Lenox, Massachusetts, who say, keep doing what you're doing. We're going to be here to support you. That's very kind. Thank you. Thanks to Anne in Pine Bush, New York, still believes in WAMC. We will continue to earn that belief day in and day out as long as we are able to be on the airwaves. Thanks to Martha and Christopher from Schenectady, New York, and Anonymous from New York, New York, who says thanks for all you do.
Thank you for what you did. And we need more people to do just that. And it doesn't have to be at a certain level. It can be whatever's comfortable for you, from a dollar up to infinity. But we need to raise some money. If we're going to make this challenge, that means everyone should give a call at 800-323-9262. Or when the panel is back on in 1 moment or two, you can do it online as well, WAMC.org. I don't want to give you the impression that our volunteers are not there while the panel's on.
They are there.
You can, of course, call at that time, but if you want to listen to the panel, you can pledge online, WAMC.org.
And if you want to pledge this morning to help us meet this challenge, but you're worried about missing the panel, it'll be on our website and the app and via podcast if you subscribe, so you could catch up.
Yeah, because
just so you know,
if for any reason you're slightly late with that, you hear about it.
I do. But we haven't, now that we have an associate producer in Madeline Reynolds, it's very rarely late, because it would be late when it would get away from me through the course of activity. But we have these tasks kind of better handled now that there's help.
Organization.
Me too. 1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. Again, a challenge on the table. $2,000 from Anonymous in Washington, Massachusetts. If we can reach $395,000 by 11 a.m., which is under an hour. It's a lot of money to make in a short amount
of time. Over 6,000, well over 6,000 to make.
But we've seen it happen before, and we know that it's possible
yeah.
that you're out there and ready and willing and able to make it go.
Here's the thing. If you love the Roundtable panel, and I know if you're listening now, you can't get enough of this Roundtable panel. You're getting it in about 10 seconds. But back it up with your dollars. 800-323-9262 or WAMC.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Are you ready for more? Okay. Panel is, so I hope you are too. New topic, and that is we're going to talk about Vladimir Putin. We're going to talk about Ukraine. We're going to talk about President Trump. And this is a story that has been percolating over the, well, I mean, obviously the larger story has been percolating for 3 years. But this latest round comes over the last several days where Trump's frustration with Putin boils over with no Ukraine peace deal in sight. The U.S. president lashed out at the Kremlin on Tuesday as the White House continued to consider increasing sanctions against Russia. President Donald Trump lashed out at the Kremlin for its unwillingness to negotiate a ceasefire with Ukraine as he continued to consider increased sanctions, an escalation from his previously friendly tone toward Vladimir Putin that came as the president appeared to grow gloomier about his ability to broker peace in Ukraine. In perhaps the harshest rhetoric yet against Putin, Trump declared that Putin is, quote, playing with fire, a reference to Russia's escalating bombardment of Ukraine in recent days, despite the U.S. president's efforts to broker a peace agreement between Kyiv and Moscow. Trump has offered mixed messages about Putin, oscillating between praise of a leader with whom he has said he believes he can do business with and frustration about his inability to bring Russia to the bargaining table. The frustration appears to have boiled over this week. On Tuesday, he suggested that he had been shielding Putin from tough consequences related to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. What Vladimir Putin doesn't realize is that if it weren't for me, lots of really bad things would have already happened to Russia, and I mean really, really bad. Shouty caps, all capitalized.
Oh, my God. It's like
he's
a toddler.
He's playing with fire, Trump posted on Truth Social. The post followed Trump's suggestion Sunday that he might be open to sanctions against Russia, a significant shift after months in which he had been so cautious about pressuring Putin that he even exempted the country from tariffs that he imposed on the rest of the world. This war is Joe Biden's fault, and President Trump has been clear he wants to see a negotiated peace deal. President Trump has also smartly kept all options on the table, that according to the White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt in the press room on Tuesday. But it was still unclear whether Trump was truly prepared to impose more sanctions. Russia invaded Ukraine, and it's Biden's fault.
How is he somehow not capable of, like, understanding what happens around him, but he is capable of masterminding this, like, this the European invasion?
Masterminding the pawns around him, yes. But it was still unclear whether Trump was truly prepared to impose more sanctions, and he has kept quiet about whether he supports a bipartisan effort in Congress to bolster them. Russia has faced years of U.S. sanctions, although experts say they could be tightened against its energy and banking sector. All right, Bo.
So this one's confusing in so many ways, Joe, because Trump talks about what Putin doesn't understand, but it seems to me that there's a whole host of things that the Trump administration and Trump himself doesn't understand. So let me throw some on the table. One, it is absolutely clear what Putin's agenda is. Russia wants to regain its position as a global superpower. What better way to regain your position as a global superpower than to be the puppeteer of the current superpower? And that's what Putin is doing. He's the puppeteer to Trump's puppet. I don't get why Trump doesn't understand that. Two, the economy in Russia, after an upward surge, has started to decline considerably. The centerpiece of the Russian economy is the military-industrial complex. Putin has an incentive to continue those factories making bombs and bullets that are going to be used on Ukraine, and Trump doesn't seem to understand that. 20 million Russians are under the poverty level. In Russia. Putin has got to keep, as I said, those factories going in order for there not to be an increase in the number of people under the poverty level. Zelensky is responsible for impeachment, according to Trump, right? So that's part of the equation here. And then the last thing I'll say is everything for Trump is a transaction. Notice these days when we talk about the defense. The Patriot missile defense system, it now has to be purchased as opposed to in the past where the Biden administration gave it away. Everything has to be a transaction. Everything has to be, in Trump's mind, you have to get something back. The thing that I don't understand as a political scientist is alliance is a good return on investment. If you continue to have alliances with those in Europe, with countries like Ukraine, that's a good return on investment. It may not have the dollar amount that Trump wants, but it's a good return on investment. But Trump doesn't seem to understand that alliance itself is a good return on investment.
Yeah, I don't think the kind of guy who definitely wouldn't wait 10 minutes to have the second marshmallow, I don't think he would understand the concept of an alliance being a positive thing. I think Trump clearly just wants to do business with Putin. Mm-hmm. And he's very confused. He's like, well, wait a minute. This guy doesn't want business. He wants to stay at war, even though that would be bad for my business. Well, I think he might have lied to me. Like, it would be funny if it wasn't, like, you know, the worst thing that's happened ever. I mean, we have this. Oh, sorry, I got distracted by how horrible it was.
Well, no, I mean, and from Putin's standpoint, he's looking at going, you know, yeah, well, all I got to do is give him a crappy plane with a lot of gold gild on it, and he'll yeah. forgive me anyway. But let's talk about sanctions for a second, Joe. The you know, one of the reasons that I thought the Biden policy was correct in Ukraine is that us arming Ukraine allowed them to continue to defend their country. So this idea of, oh, we're going to install sanctions, you know, I'm going to put sanctions on Russia, and it's going to be really, really bad. How is that so? And not only that, you know, Donald, you have just poked the every country in the eye with your 10% tariffs or if not more. Do you really think that they're not going to be looking at Russia as a potential trading partner? Because you can't trust the United States anymore as a partner. So maybe sanctions aren't going to work. You know, and the other thing, too, is that he keeps attacking the European Union. Mm-hmm. And now the European Union's going, OK, wait a sec. I have Russia that, you know, that Bo's comments are spot on, Putin is dependent upon continuing the war. And frankly, I would argue that he has got to expand the war, and he's not made any bones about it that he would like to return the Soviet Union to its former glory, and that includes, you know, the Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, well into Europe, and if we are not going to be a good partner, if we aren't going to be solid in our support of NATO, and if the countries in Europe don't believe that if they are attacked that the United States will perform in accordance with our treaty obligations, this is all adding to our weakness the decline in the United States as a power, and allowing places like China and Russia to grow. I'll also note that, you know, we spent a lot of time in the first hour talking about Marco Rubio, right? Marco Rubio shouldn't be worried about student visas. Mm-hmm. He should be worried about what's going on in Russia. He should be worried about what's going on in Gaza. He should be worried what is going on with China. But instead, what's he doing? He's playing footsies with student visas, because Trump isn't serious about dealing with Putin.
Yeah, and I think the other thing I'll say, Bob, I think you're exactly right. The other thing I'll say is that for Trump, the globe is one-dimensional, right? That is, he probably would prefer a world in which there are just three superpowers. He can admit that China is going to be a superpower. He can admit that Russia is acts like a superpower, and the United States. As long as he knows that there are only three superpowers, and Europe can be subordinate to American interests, then I think he probably feels as though he's in control. He's, as I've used in the past, he's king of the hill. The American isolationism, Bob, you're exactly right. American isolationism is itself A, dangerous, B, foolish, and not in America's self-interest. So all of these things that Trump is focused on, I think, are problematic for the future.
Well, 1984 was a cautionary tale. It wasn't a how-to book, although that would be giving Trump credit for actually having read. Maybe he looked at the coloring book version of it.
The graphic novel.
Graphic novel. Sorry. Yes.
But I knew what you meant. Yes. All right. Let's go to Diane, who says, it's so sad that a pathetic elderly man is trying to engage in international diplomacy by midnight tweets in all caps. That from Diane, the word being pathetic there. Hey, guys, says Deb, wondering if the panel can talk about the actual humans being behind Donald Trump and the kindergartners in his cabinet, the Heritage Foundation, America First, etc., and how can we possibly defend our country against them?
Sure. I mean, I think that one of the things that's super interesting is everybody was frightened between, let's say, 2023 and January 20th of 2025 about Project 2025, right? This was going to be absolutely the most apocryphal and just ridiculous, damaging playbook for the GOP. And actually, Bob, I think you said it earlier on, the Trump administration has gone to the right of Project 2025 on lots of the things, USAID being sort of the first. And in, as I've said many times before, in its place is China sweeping in and becoming the influencer in the countries in which we should be paying attention.
In many respects, the Heritage Foundation, I think, bears an awful lot of responsibility for, you know, what I would deem to be an anti-American, almost a terrorist manifesto in Project 2025. They own an awful lot of this, but the people who are implementing Project 2025 have taken it well beyond. Although, Joe, maybe I have the answer to how we deal with Russia. I say we send Elon Musk over to Russia to look at efficiencies in Russian government, because if he does to the Russian government what he did to our government, there won't be a government left.
True. I'll also say, Joe, just a footnote to what Bob just said about Project 2025, Russ Vogt is the most dangerous person in that administration, and I'm including Stephen Miller in that group. It's a low bar, but Russ Vogt is super dangerous.
And the scary thing about Vogt is that, I mean, while Miller is the public face of Wormtongue whispering in Trump's ear, Vogt's really the the Puppet Master.
All right. Cheered up? Okay, let's go. Hey, guys, says Frank. Bob mentioned that the cabinet is neutered and that Trump is, quote, clever. Trump and clever seem like an oxymoron. The cabinet is not neutered. The select few seem more empowered to bring these despicable ideas to Trump for approval to act. These proposals are like dead animals your cat or dog may bring owners looking for that who's a good dog approval. Trump is not having these revelations on the golf course. His minions are on patrol to scour the dregs of their ranks for these travesties, and we are paying the price.
It's a valid point, and what worries me about the cabinet is that they are all striving for Daddy Trump's attention, so they get more and more outrageous. So you see the inherent stupidity of the Secretary of Homeland Security, who doesn't even understand the basic concept of habeas corpus, but they triple down on it, and then you see Lee Zeldin go, "Well, hold my beer," and with the EPA, he does something even dumber, and then they're all trying to chase Hedgeth and Pam Bondi. I mean, it's not the ship of state; it's the ship of fools.
I think that instead of neutered, I think that they're just kind of simping for him, you know, like they're worshiping him in a way. And it's very pathetic. They just don't have any spines. They don't have any will of their own. It's not like they're ineffectual, of course. That's the danger. It's just that they're, you know, there's just no substance to them.
Yeah. And look at Kennedy. Look what he's doing with, you know, and again, all of these guys claimed one thing when they were getting all of these people. It's not just the guys. I mean, there isn't a single person in his cabinet that I have respect for. But you think about what Kennedy is doing to the health system. And again, I think that when it's all said and done, there are some major questions that we're going to have to go back to about their own personal liability for what they have done to the country, regardless of what the Supreme Court did with their immunity, findings.
I think it's interesting that watching the evolution of Scott Bessent, right? Because he was the one, he and Rubio, I would say, were the two that came into the administration with some bona fides, right? Some credibility. And over the last month, Bessent has become the sycophant that Emily's talking about, right? So it is true that when the top credential that is necessary for you to get into the cabinet is being good in front of a TV, right, in front of a camera, that you're not going to get folks who really have depth of understanding.
Margaret says, as always, I agree with everything the panel has been saying, but I hope you haven't been too distracted by issues such as Harvard defunding, international student visas, restrictions, transgender issues, etc. Meanwhile, the Trump administration has quietly been setting up more and more voting restrictions. Yep. Actually, we talked about that yesterday. I know I, for one, am counting on the midterm elections to break the MAGA control of both houses of Congress as well as the executive branch and the Supreme Court.
Very optimistic to think that there will be midterms, but
we'll hope. I think there'll be midterms. And I hear what you're saying, Emily. If today were the day, I actually think it would be 50-seat swing in the House of Representatives. I still think the Republican Party, the GOP, would control the Senate, but the 50-vote swing seems like it's reasonable. Now, I don't know what it's going to be like next November, but if it were today, it'd probably be a 50-vote swing.
And 50-seat
swing.
I worry because I'm not sure. It's funny you peg 50. I'm not sure it would be that high. Hmm. And you know, I'm looking at places. I was down in Asheville in North Carolina the last 3 months, and the amount of damage from the storm is catastrophic. And the idea that FEMA is not helping them is mind-blowing to me. I mean, it goes against, you know, everything that I personally believe in as a former first responder. I don't understand as a country how we can turn our back on those people. They need money. They need the resources of the federal government. But if you held an election today, would I tell you that they would vote Democrat in either the Senate election or the congressional election? No, I don't think so. Which is this weirdness that we have as a country right now, where we hate Congress but we love the people that are closest to us. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are members of Congress around us right here, just north and west of Albany, where I think you just voted to cut the health benefits of your own people. You just voted on a bill that's going to starve children. But why would anyone vote for you? But then you look at polling numbers and their approval ratings are still high. Mm-hmm. I don't know what we need to do as a country to kick ourselves in the keister and stop this bowing to the incumbents.
We need to convince them that Stefanik is woke, that voting for her is part of the DEI agenda. I think that's going to be our next thing.
That or term limits for Congress members.
Yes, term limits.
That might be a little bit preposterous.
But. It might not be in the future.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We welcome you, panel@wamc.org. We will return with more right after this short break.
Tell me I'm yours, or tell me that I won't be in the morning when I'm up early, telling you straight that I'm meant to get dirty.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Bo Breslin, Bob Griffin, and Emily Honan making up the group. We have about 10 minutes or so left before we hear from the folks from Pledge Central and the important work they're doing to help fill the lockbox. We welcome you, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. So let's move on to another topic, and that topic is we're going to talk about trade, but let's talk about trade crime. And here's the story. As President Trump's tariffs have ratcheted up in recent months, so have the mysterious solicitations some U.S. companies have received offering them ways to avoid the taxes. Shipping companies, many of them based in China, have reached out to U.S. firms that import apparel, auto parts, and jewelry, offering solutions that they can make to make the tariffs go away. We can avoid high duties from China, which we have already done many in the past, read one email to a U.S. importer. Beat U.S. tariffs, a second read, promising to cap the tariffs at a flat 10%. It added, you ship worry-free.
I miss the Nigerian prince.
Yeah. Yes. Another proclaimed, good news, the tariffs have been dropped finally. The proposals, which are circulating in emails as well as in videos on TikTok and other platforms, reflect a new flood of fraudulent activity, according to company executives and government officials. As U.S. tariffs on foreign products have increased sharply in recent months, so have the incentives for companies to find ways around them. The Chinese firms advertising these services describe their methods as valid solutions for a fee. They find ways to bring products to the United States with much lower tariffs, but experts say these practices are methods of customs fraud. The companies may be dodging tariffs by altering the information about the shipments that is given to the U.S. government to qualify for a lower tariff rate, or they may move the goods to another country that is subject to a lower tariff before shipping it to the United States. That is a technique known as transshipment. So it is surprising, Bob Griffin, that you open up the hen house and you say, okay, I don't need fences. I don't need a gate. and then be surprised that there is activity going on that is at best fraudulent and finally just damaging.
Well, yeah, and you know, you open the hen house and the fat well-fed fox is there at our expense. I will also note that the sad part about the analogy is that our president came out and talked about how he thought that basically only suckers paid taxes.
Yeah.
You know, so you start to think about it and think about what he paid in taxes, and now he basically showed the fox the way into the hen house. Tariffs are taxes, Joe. I mean, we keep playing the semantical games about what it is and who's going to pay it. The truth of the matter is that they're taxes, and when the taxes go up and the costs coming in, people are going to look for other alternatives. I mean, this is sort of going back to some of the history of the founding of this country. You start to think about smuggling.
Yeah.
You know, and that is exactly where we are right now. I expect to see an awful lot more fraud. I also expect to see, the ripoffs and the people being sold what they think are high quality goods when they're not, because these are all functions of government that now have been gutted by the cuts. You know, it raises again. What is the role of government? What is the role of tariffs? And in his push to implement, you know, his philosophies on tariffs, he not only is upending the global economy, but the secondary and tertiary effects of that are things that we haven't even started to get our arms around. And what scares me is that we start to think about, you know, the transshipment that you talked about, the idea of China sending materials to country B who has lower tariffs. What they're also doing is creating these pipelines for smuggling of other things. So you start to think about the issues of fentanyl, which is a huge public health crisis. That we're making it actually easier to start to circumvent our borders, making our borders more porous to trade. So these are all of the impacts that I see. This is only the beginning of this problem, particularly as he continues to play this game of we're going to put more tariffs on, the tariff hokey pokey, I call it. I'm going to put my left foot in and I'm going to pull it back and I'm going to tease the market. This is with us for a while.
Yeah, I was going to say, I keep saying that, you know, Democrats need to start playing Trump's game. You know, they need to stop trying to feel like the systems in place are going to protect them. They need to do something crazy for legal reasons. Don't quote me on that. But it's not them who is doing that, obviously. It's China. They've gotten there first. Now they're like, oh, well, there's no more rules anymore. The president isn't subject to rules, so we're just not going to play by them either. So, yeah, it really is just... They always say it's whenever you ban something, you're not banning it. You're just banning the legal version of it.
Right.
And, you know, obviously just skyrocketing the crime and fraud rate.
And let me just throw it on the table. The obvious irony here in that Trump has had a long history of fraudulent business transactions himself, not the one. My all-time favorite is Trump University, because I'm in the higher ed space. Trump University itself was fraudulent. So, you know, I think that both Emily and Bob, you're both right. My question, I always think about what the Democrats are thinking about. But the other question is, as tariffs start to feel a little bit old, what's the next Trump leverage point that will also lead to the quote-unquote entrepreneurship of these Chinese industries, right? And so the consequences, Bob, as you say, the ripple effects down the road, that administration seems not to pay attention to. And as they gear up on their next one, their next enemy, their next quote-unquote tariff, what are the consequences down the road with a civil service that simply cannot stay up with what they're asking?
In an economy that's crashing,
right?
you know, and I've been watching with great interest a lot of the articles about the shipping manifests the orders that are being put in now, because you put orders in now for the holiday season, and how the huge drop. So you've got this issue of fraud, but you also have this issue of scarcity that's going to be coming to it, which is going to be pushing people to even think harder about how to circumvent the limitations that are being put in.
You don't need $25, Bob.
I also don't need a gold-plated plane from Qatar, but that's what we've got.
And the other thing is the arm of the federal government that is supposed to be monitoring this, the Consumer Protection Board, that too was gutted.
Mm-hmm. Doge and Elon Musk did something to this country that the Japanese and Germans couldn't do in World War II, and certainly the Russians and Chinese couldn't do. That's that they destroyed the infrastructure of the federal government.
Mm-hmm. I'm always curious about whether or not Europe emerges at the end of the Trump administration or over the next, say, decade, emerges as the moral and economic leader, right? The moral and economic king. I think the EU is poised to do that. The Trump administration sees that as the biggest nightmare. But at the end of the day, I think Europe, with all of these consequences, the stuff that Bobby and you and Emily are talking about, I think Europe emerges as that both moral and economic leader of the next decade.
Well, if you're going to look there, you got to look at Poland. I'm not sure you're going to be able to look. I think the UK is such a mess, and I certainly have less faith in France and Germany, but I do have faith in Poland.
Yeah.
But it's a huge question, but it's also a question that Putin's asking. And if we talked a little bit earlier, and this goes back to that the element of the Ukraine. Without America supporting NATO, I would anticipate moves against places like Poland.
With that, we are out of time for this Wednesday morning. My thanks to our wonderful panelists, as always, Bo Breslin, Bob Griffin, and Emily Honan. You're all marvelous, and I thank you so much for your time and your thoughtfulness as we navigate these issues. I appreciate you all being here. We will continue right after this.